If you're like me, you probably learn more about the Tahitian media in the last 5 minutes than you ever knew before. That's symptomatic of how well Australian and even New Zealand journalism engages with the Pacific. David Robey's an exception. He spent more than 35 years writing about the region, covering the anti-nuclear movements, the independence struggles in New Caledonia, coups in Fiji, and war in Bougainville. And he has a distinctive approach, which he calls critical development journalism.
I think there's a tendency in journalism globally, and not just in the Pacific, but globally, that journalism tends to be a bit too cosy with political power. And agendas are often set in the media based around, press galleries and what's seen as priorities by governments. Whereas critical development journalism is really a proclamation, if you like, for ordinary people basically getting their values and actually their needs, investigated and getting some sort of result from policy changes.
It means you're going against the flow, though, doesn't it? And it means that you've been accused in the past of being an activist as much as a journalist.
Yes, I've been accused of that. I think, frankly, it's quite farcical. But that was particularly during a period when I was reporting in New Caledonia in the mid-80s. I was seen to be too close to the independence movements, the Kanak FNKS, etc., etc., etc. The way I saw it was that the main media, particularly mainstream, the news agencies, and of course you have to look at it in the context of that time, that news agencies like the French News Agency and various others used government officials as their correspondents are locally on the ground. And I was determined to get the people's voice heard and report what was really happening in New Caledonia at a village level and with the ordinary people.
Apart from the Philippines, which despite having a healthy media must be one of the most dangerous places in the world to be a journalist, which other places in the Pacific make it particularly difficult to do the job?
Without question, West Papua. And West Papua is the really neglected region in the Pacific. It's the two provinces now, and West Papua, the Indonesians, split the provinces into two to basically divide and rule to a greater level. But because there is virtually no ready access into West Papua by journalists.
You can't get in, can you, unless you're prepared to fill in a lot of forms and walk around with a minder all the time, or unless you're prepared to do it essentially unsanctioned.
Yes, and if you do it unsanctioned, not only is it a huge risk for the journalist, but it's actually the context, the sources, that's even greater risk, for the people that journalists actually talk to. So that's part of the problem. But also, it's because the countries in the region, particularly Australia and New Zealand, are not too concerned about West Papua. Both countries are far more concerned with their ongoing relationship with Indonesia, and they don't want to rock the boat. And consequently, outside the government's sort of sphere of interest. So, relatively speaking, few journalists have taken an interest.
What about places like Fiji?
Well, Fiji remains a huge problem, and of course we're hoping that with elections in September that things will improve somewhat, even if the Bainimarama regime continues in an elected frame, which is certainly very much on the cards. But I'm certainly hopeful from a media perspective that already we're seeing signs of some of the very weak approach that media have had in the last few years. They've been cowed by the whole system, the media decrees, the censorship after 2009. That whole chilling environment has actually sort of meant that a country that had the most feisty media, or certainly arguably the most feisty media in the Pacific, was a media that was so timid. But we're seeing signs in recent times of just how media is starting to sort of really challenge things. And then you've got Republica magazine that was started by Ricardo Morris. That is hugely outspoken as well. But as Ricardo actually sort of argues, well, it's a bit easier for a smaller publication because basically, even if they get closed, if the pressure really comes on, it's only two or three people that might be out of a job and they can go and do other things. But the larger media organisations, such as the Fiji Times, for example, so many people depend on the organisation for their jobs. 170 people, I think, are employed by the Fiji Times at the moment. So it is, it's rather more difficult for the larger organisations. But even so, I think they're starting to really push the boundaries.
That is positive. David, you're also familiar of course, with places that we tend, certainly in Australia, to think of as sort of sleepier, places like Tonga and French Polynesia. How are things faring for journalists there?
Well, if we start off with Tonga first, we've had, you know, momentous changes. And, of course, there's elections coming up in November there too. The last elections in 2010 were heralded as the first really democratic elections. And the next ones are going to be taking the barrow even further. I think there's been quite dramatic changes in the media. And I think, for example, the Taimeo Tonga media organisation, which published in exile for many years in Auckland, has certainly been leading the way in Tonga, and then also Matangi Tonga, which is an online publication that's excellent, does some really excellent work. So we've seen some quite dramatic improvements, I think, in the media in Tonga. But if we look at French Polynesia, which previously had well-established media, had two daily newspapers, and unfortunately one of them, which had been publishing for more than half a century, the Nouvelle de Tahiti, has just been closed down. There's been a change of ownership, and the new owners, their local investment company in media, has decided that it's been losing too heavily, so it's been closed. That's a big blow to journalism in French Polynesia. There's a hope that maybe there's a version of it might be resurrected as an online publication. It's still online at the moment, but that newspaper, La Nouvelle, has done some really good things for Tahiti.
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned online. You've written recently about the pressures that are being brought to bear on some digital and online publications in the Pacific, something I hadn't thought about at all.
That's right. I have written quite a bit about that recently, particularly what we saw was in the Philippines, what was called the electronic martial law, which is essentially a new law that was adopted in 2012. Which basically makes defamation, or libel as they refer to it in the Philippines in particular, as criminal, and increasing the criminal code punishments in a far more draconian way than was in the ordinary print laws. So, for example, that if you're convicted now for criminal defamation, instead of only a six-month sentence, it's now been increased to six years. And this looked like an isolated example of a cybercrime law. But in fact, since then, it's taking hold elsewhere in the wider Pacific region. Papua New Guinea, for example, has been mooting a new law which will require the identities of people posting on social media, et cetera, which is going to put a chilling factor on the media. And also in Thailand, before the new coup that's just happened there, we had the Computer Crime Act there that was aimed at a online publication, and two journalists were indicted, one of them Australian. So that's been a trend that's become rather worrying for the region.
In the past, Australia has probably had a mixed to somewhat indifferent record in terms of covering the region, certainly the Pacific part of the region, in terms of journalism. What would you like to see us doing differently in that department, but also perhaps in terms of aid?
Well, of course, there is a substantial aid program that operates out of Vanuatu, PACMAS, and of course the ABC has got a major role in that as well. And that's been quite a big step forward compared with the past. But, you know, there is a view around the region that to some degree that it's a bit of a band-aid, because, in fact, it's really aimed around short courses and really patching up what hasn't been done in the first place. Namely, that journalists in Australia and New Zealand have a fairly solid grounding, good training. They come out with a degree in journalism or degree in other fields and another major, but have a very solid grounding before they even hit a newsroom. Right throughout the Pacific, most journalists don't have any real training. Most come out of secondary schools, and they have a little bit of short course training, maybe a couple of weeks here and there. And so it means it's a constant process of having a bit of catch-up with training. So really what's needed is a lot more support for solid journalism training right throughout the region.
Actually, speaking of training, David Roby, who's now at the Auckland University of Technology, has been educating journalists in the Pacific since 1993. His book is Don't Spoil My Beautiful Face, Media, Mayhem and Human Rights in the Pacific. Details on the website, abc.net.au/radionational.